All right. I'm Katya Gordon. I'm your hostess this morning on What's Happening on KTWH 99.5 FM. And this morning we have Greg Ruberg. He is calling into the station remotely. He is the CEO of Lakeview Hospital right here in Two Harbors. Greg, thanks so much for calling in this morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm sure it has been a busy week, shall we say, for you?
It's been a very busy week.
Yes. I would like to start just with a note of appreciation that you and all people medical facilities are certainly working under duress right now, and we'll hear more about the details about that, but a huge thank you for, everything we hear is about what people are doing and stepping over and doing more than normal. And also how lucky we are to have a hospital in our own hometown. Many, many, many cities our size do not have facilities anywhere nearby that we have. And I know that we've talked a lot about that before, but it seems like that kind of fact is coming into its own right now. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. I agree. We're very fortunate to have really a full array of medical services in our community, including emergency room, urgent care, medical clinic, and then also the resources of a large system supporting that. So we are fortunate as a community.
Yes. So give us a little insight into just the last week or two. How does a medical facility such as ours prepare? What's going on right now?
Yeah, I'll share about the last week or the last 8 days. Things have really changed significantly at Lakeview and in hospitals around the country. So since last Friday, the majority of this change has happened this week starting on Monday morning, but we have canceled all elective surgeries and non-essential procedures at Lakeview. As we've talked about before, we've got a number of proceduralists and surgeons that come up and do all kinds of specialties. All of those are postponed indefinitely. We made that change after our day of surgery and procedures on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, Governor Walz issued an executive order recommending or stipulating that all hospitals and ambulatory surgery centers cease operation of those non-elective. The purpose of that is really to conserve resources and supplies, masks, gowns, all of the medical supplies that would go into a non-elective surgery with the goal of preserving that for a surge of COVID-19 that may come in the future. The other piece of that is keeping our staff healthy, and the more people we have in the building, the more risk we put on our staff, and we need our staff healthy and ready to treat patients as if and when things change.
Yes, I get it now. That makes sense. What else?
The other things that we did is we eliminated all of our, we closed our fitness center in Two Harbors and Silver Bay, and all related fitness and health related wellness classes. Again, trying to just reduce the number of people that are coming into the building so that we have a core group of employees that are healthy and ready to assist patients that are in need of care. All of our community groups have been postponed in the building. So they're, initially we said until the end of March, but now that is really indefinitely. We'll reevaluate on a week-by-week basis. But again, we want people to avoid congregating together, and we don't want them in the hospital where we need resources and staff.
Yes. Now, it goes without saying maybe, but I'll say it anyway, is the health and wellness loss of that is a terrible loss to our community. Hopefully not long term, but I know that being wellness and not emergency oriented has been sort of a hallmark of where we've been going, so that we don't have so many emergencies. So do you have any special advice or thoughts about how to find alternatives and replace all these institutions that are set up for our mental health and our physical health? So it's almost like we're going into a crisis without the normal resources we would have because we need these special resources. I know you don't have a magic answer to that, but I just sort of wanted it acknowledged somehow that, all the things being canceled had a lot of value.
Absolutely. That is a big concern of ours for, again, patients' physical health and mental health, like you mentioned. We've had a number of programs here that have helped people socially connect and build support networks. We've had, programs for physical health and wellness. We are encouraging people to keep exercising, whether you can do that in your home in by yourself, where you can maintain appropriate distance, going outside and walking and biking and those kind of things, avoiding crowds as best you can. I think it's really important that people keep up physical exercise. People need to stay connected to loved ones and support systems, and some of that can be done virtually now through FaceTime and Skype and some of those things. I think a good old-fashioned phone call is good. We don't want people isolated socially. Again, I think more if we think about physical distancing, where you're 18 at 6 feet apart, you can still talk with people, again, remotely and virtually.
So give us a little outline of this social distancing stipulation that has come down the pike for us. And it's in a way, it's a vague term, but tell us more about that if you can.
Yes, I think this is one of the most important messages people could take away from today is what we're trying to do in healthcare, and I think in public health and all these other agencies and institutions, is really try focusing on prevention right now, or experts are calling flattening the curve. So the challenge right now is, I think for the majority of young people, if they were to get COVID-19, they would have mild to no symptoms. Of course, some would have more significant symptoms, but overall, we're seeing that younger people typically do fairly well. The challenge is what they end up carrying the virus from person to person, and the risk is to the elderly population or those with medical conditions. So the goal right now, and some people have said, well, this seems a little bit extreme or a little bit too aggressive, but what we're trying to do is the more we can isolate people and prevent that spread from person to person, we can flatten the curve. And what that means is right now, as you look across the country, as of yesterday, Minnesota had 89 cases. The day before it had 77. And I know they've tested about 3,100 patients in Minnesota as of yesterday, and that continues. We'll talk about that in a second. But the more the virus spreads, it exponentially starts to increase. It will start spreading faster and faster. So if we can really get ahead of this and stop or slow down that spread, what that will do is allow hospitals to care for people without being completely overwhelmed if we get to a point that it's just spread all over because people weren't following the guidelines.
So this is a largely preventative measure that is for young and old alike. And I'm sure difficult in... I mean, what I wonder too about is how about elderly people that are living essentially alone, the social distancing and social, like, are they really supposed to just stay on their own as much as possible and not have any contact with people physically? That seems like a hard one for a long period of time. Can you address that?
Yeah, that is a best practice, though, because they're at most risk. And so if they go to the grocery store, again, every time you go out, you're increasing your risk of being exposed to the virus. Now, I don't think people should panic. Clearly, there's some best practices and some really solid guidelines to follow. But again, maybe having family members do their shopping and bring it to their house for them and disinfecting, washing hands and disinfecting frequently. What concerns me is when I see people interviewed that say, well, if I'm going to get it, I'm going to get it. Let's just get it over with. Or I'm not going to worry about it. If I get it, I'll probably be fine. The challenge, though, is everybody that they're in contact with is at some risk. And again, those people that are probably vulnerable will have a lot harder time getting through it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we know it's a small percentage of people that will end up in the hospital or the ICU, but every person matters, and we want to make sure that we do everything we can to prevent that.
Yeah. And is it possible that we would, I mean, obviously this is all preventative, and in some ways we're very lucky that we're doing all these things before we have actual confirmed cases, although we know there's a lag time as well, so we really only know about a few weeks ago what's going on here, but is it possible that we will end up helping other areas, Greg? Like, are there going to be patients coming here from other areas, or is it really, it's definitely going to be localized?
You know, I think that's really hard to say. I think if we do a really good job on the social distancing and social and that kind of isolation piece to prevent, I think we could be well prepared to treat those that need hospitalization. The challenge is going to be is the people that typically need hospitalization need a higher level of care, such as ventilators and ICUs. And the rural hospitals typically don't have that. And so if you look around the country, patients in the rural areas that get ill, they're going to have to go to the tertiary centers or the larger cities, and that's where the capacity concern is about. So again, the healthier we are here, we are indirectly helping the larger cities in our referral hospitals. But again, with the testing, we're treating people, we can talk more about this, but
yeah,
we're assuming people have COVID-19 if they have the symptoms that are correlated or related to COVID-19. We're treating them the same way whether we test or not.
Okay, so I was going to ask about testing. We've heard a lot about if we could just test people, we would know what we were looking at. And you're saying that is becoming less so?
Correct. Earlier this week, you know, the testing guidelines have changed throughout the week a couple of times, but earlier in the week, there was a backlog of between 700 to 1,000 tests a day at the Minnesota Department of Health that needed to be tested. Well, from a resource standpoint, it was getting backed up. Then we got to a point where testing supplies became more limited, and we were trying to conserve for those that really need it. So as of today, the standard is we're testing for really three categories of patients or people. Number one is healthcare workers and first responders that have symptoms. And the reason for that is we need healthcare workers and first responders to be healthy and avoiding spread to other healthcare workers so that we can treat the community when and if they become sick. Number two is patients that are in a hospital setting receiving inpatient care, such as having respiratory symptoms or in the ICU. We'll test those as well because it's really important for those patients. And category three is residents of skilled nursing facilities and group homes. Again, really because typically they can, you know, they're elderly in the skilled nursing facilities or have medical comorbidities in the group homes, and it can spread quickly there, and again, it impacts them more significantly. So those are the only three that we're testing now. If a patient presents to Lakeview or St. Luke's or Essentia today with symptoms of a fever, a cough, or shortness of breath, instead of relying on the testing, we treat them as if they have COVID-19, which means they need to go home, self-isolate, you know, use all of the recommendations you've seen as far as fever-reducing medications, hydration, rest, all of those things, and let the illness run its course. The key now, too, is they have to be home for 7 days after the onset of illness, and then for a minimum of 72 hours after the fever goes away without any medications. So, again, that's a long period of time.
Yes.
And again, the goal is that the illness runs its course, they're no longer contagious before they go back out and infect somebody else.
Right. And so for listeners right here in Two Harbors who feel a sore throat coming on or sniffles, what course of recommended action would you take to not or not take?
That is a great question. So what we've been telling patients at Lakeview, I'll speak to Lakeview specifically now, is if you have symptoms coming on that you think is the common cold, obviously you would want to, you know, hand washing, disinfecting, isolate, try to reduce the risk of transmission. If you have symptoms that are related to COVID-19, which right now are fever greater than 100.4, a cough, you know, kind of a persistent cough, or difficulty breathing, those are COVID-19 symptoms.
Okay.
We ask that you please do not come into our emergency room or into our clinic first. We ask that you call ahead. So for the clinic, we ask you to call 834-7700. The ER 834-7311. And what we will do is we'll still treat you, but we want you to call ahead so we can talk through with you about your symptoms and how we'd want you to present, which means we might meet you at the door with a mask to put a mask on the patient so it's not spread to other patients
mm-hmm.
and our staff.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a hotline, which you can find in a number of places locally. St. Luke's has a nurse hotline. Essentia has a hotline that you can call. They'll triage you, ask an algorithm of questions to see were you exposed to somebody with COVID-19, where have you traveled to, what are your symptoms, and they'll come up with recommendations and work directly with us as well.
All right. So the simple reality for people to remember just is don't assume you go to the hospital. Call if you have any questions. I'm sure if you want to question whether your symptoms, I mean, maybe you have a fever, but not much of a fever, and maybe you just have a sinus infection, or, I mean, there's all so many different things that could be going through people's minds right now. And so the main thing is call and talk to somebody about it, and they will help you figure out what to do or not do.
Correct. Two things I would add to that. So one of the challenges we're faced with in healthcare right now is there's a lot of influenza A and B going around still.
Yes.
So we're getting closer to the end of the flu season, but we're still seeing positive tests for both, as well as RSV. And so those will somewhat mimic the COVID symptoms. Again, same recommendations, self-isolate, you know, all the things we just talked about. The other thing I would, just to make sure listeners are clear on, is if a patient has significant shortness of breath or trouble breathing that is an emergency, that is the time to go to the emergency room, and we have all the precautions in place, all the protective equipment in place, all the protocols established. We'll treat you, and we'll protect you, other patients, and our staff. But again, all others should be calling ahead if they're not in an emergency situation.
All right. Got it. Very good distinction there. And you seem very confident in your staff. Are your staff doing all right?
They are. It's certainly been a challenging week. I think we've spent very long days working with staff and departments across the organization. I think there's really two parts. There's the stress of as we close programs and we postpone services, we have employees that work in those departments. So what we're doing is there's a lot of work. We're, you know, a fairly lean organization, so we're helping get caught up on some work. We're helping support other departments. And then we're really working hard to support our frontline staff, our physicians, our nurse practitioners, our clinical assistants, our support staff in clinic and hospital, making sure we have enough personal protective equipment, reviewing protocols, reassuring that we have processes in place that patients will call instead of walking in. We limited visitors in the building so people aren't bringing in the virus and exposing staff. So I think it's a very, it's a stressful time for everybody in the community, but I'm very confident our staff has done a great job. They're holding up well. They're supporting each other. And I think our community as well has really come together and is supporting each other. The key message is we have to do the right things to keep this from spreading between people in our community that would result in a surge that is going to be difficult to handle.
Yeah, so it's all prevention at this stage, and it's about not overwhelming our infrastructure and our medical facility. And you seem to be, it seems like we're in some ways a lot more fortunate than some of the cities that really became overwhelmed with actual numbers before they took the same measures that we have taken. So hopefully that will hold in well.
I agree. I think we were fortunate as a state, but then also as a region that we were able to kind of get ahead of this a little bit. But again, the next couple of weeks we'll keep preparing and we'll keep responding.
Yep. And we'll keep you informed via the radio. I hope you are able to give us updates, Greg, periodically. Is there anything else that I forgot to ask or that you'd like listeners to know?
Yeah, there's two more things I think would be important to cover. When we talk about our healthcare delivery model, it's been very much focused on face-to-face visits in the past. And you and I have talked about this.
Yes.
We're working really hard with our St. Luke's partners and regional partners in the state and Medicare on rolling out a new delivery model, which is called telehealth. Hmm. And so telehealth is a virtual visit where it could be as simple as a physician with a phone on FaceTime and a patient with their phone on FaceTime interacting both with audio and video.
Yeah.
And doing a visit where the patient's sitting at home on their couch.
Yeah.
Prior to this week, Medicare was not a covered visit from a reimbursement standpoint unless the patient was in our clinic remotely connected to somebody, say, in Duluth.
Oh.
Right. So it was an executive order that changed that. So now our physician could be sitting in his or her office, connecting with somebody on their couch at home and doing a visit where we get reimbursed. The patient gets the same medical care for those conditions that are appropriate. So we're rolling that out actually today, and that'll be available more widely next week. So that's a significant positive step forward.
Yeah, that's a huge change. That's amazing. Wow. So that's going to change how people are able to access services.
Absolutely. The other thing I would reassure the public on is we were very fortunate. We're in direct conversation with, we had a phone call last weekend with Governor Walz and Commissioner Malcolm from the Minnesota Department of Health on how Minnesota is going to respond. So we've had direct communications back with both the governor's office and MDH. We've had calls with the Minnesota Hospital Association on a pretty regular basis. We're connected well within the St. Luke's system. St. Luke's and Essentia are working together with press releases and press conferences. And then also, again, updates from the CDC. So we have really good partners all around us, and we're getting really information on a minute-by-minute basis, and we're updating what we're doing. So I think that is reassuring that we have everybody working together and collaborating and really trying to unify so that we get through this thing and we do well.
Yes. So you're seeing a lot of really good collaboration going on, and you're confident that the steps we're taking are good steps. So that's really good to hear. Thank you so much. I'm speaking with Greg Ruberg, the CEO of Lakeview Hospital, and this interview will be rebroadcast on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Greg, thanks so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
Or for calling in, I should say. you are not here physically.
We maintain the social distancing for our interview.
That's right. All right. You take care.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. That was Greg Ruberg with the Lakeview Hospital. And you're listening to What's Happening on KTWH.